Hey everyone, welcome to episode 45 of the Stoic Performance Podcast. As many of you know, I really encourage for you guys to reach out to me, whether it's via email or Twitter, to provide me with podcast feedback and also with guest recommendations. One name that kept popping up time and time again was Dr. Frederick Correa. Many of you know him as the co-owner of Eccentric, but you may not know that he's also their head of research and development. I was a little hesitant at first to bring Frederick on the podcast, simply because I try to steer away from interviewing the owners of companies. I mean, obviously they're going to have a biased or skewed view of their product. Who wouldn't? However, I knew that you guys wanted to hear from him. And beyond that, Frederick is a medical doctor. He has worked as a physical preparation coach, working with amateur and semi-professional hockey players in Sweden. And he's just a really knowledgeable guy when it comes to flywheel technology. As soon as I mentioned that he was coming on the podcast, I was literally inundated with emails. I probably got around 8 to 10 questions that people wanted me to ask him. I didn't get to all of them on the podcast, unfortunately, simply because of the time constraint. But Frederick was gracious enough to say, I want to answer the listener questions. So he actually wrote a blog post that he's going to be posting on Eccentric either today or tomorrow, and I'm going to be making sure to link that in the show notes. So I hope it answers all of your questions. Beyond that, what we talk about in this episode is just the history of flywheel technology. We also talk about practical applications, not only in the sports performance setting, but also how personal trainers can use it with general population. And finally, we close out the podcast talking about some research and development projects currently in the works at Eccentric. I really hope you guys enjoy the show. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Stoic Performance Podcast. I'm really happy to offer a warm welcome to Frederick Correa. He's joining me today from Sweden. Frederick, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. How are you, James?
I'm doing really well.
Thanks for having me.
Frederick, to start us off, can you give us a little bit of information about your background and journey that ended up with you founding Eccentric or being one of the co-founders?
Sure. My background I played ice hockey when I was a kid, and that turned into me being an ice hockey coach when I was about 15. I think it was about 14. I started coaching a team while I was still playing. And after a while, I quit playing and just focused on coaching. I did that for 15 years. And during those years, I had a quick go at the Royal Institute of Technology, but dropped out pretty fast. And instead, I started a coaching program with the University of Health, Sport and Health Sciences here in Stockholm, GIH. That led me to wanted to go deeper into physiology and maybe research. So I went to Karolinska Institute and studied physiology for a year and came in contact with a group that worked with hypertrophy aimed at training in space for astronauts mainly, and they worked with flywheel equipment. I had sort of a opportunity to go into research there. I did a few projects, smaller projects, but I felt that they didn't really have the solid base to have a prosperous research career. So I ended up going into med school instead, mainly to get a better base for research. While I was in med school, I was really attracted to that, so I ended up doing my internships and residency, and that time passes. So, during those years, when I came in contact with that group, instead, since I joined med school, I turned the research side down, and instead I had some ideas, and together with a hockey colleague of mine, we had some ideas for product development, and that went back and forth during a couple of years, and eventually in make it a short story, in 2011 we started Eccentric to start manufacture the K-Box. So yeah, that's how we ended up there.
Frederick, as you mentioned, you know, you did the research. You were originally a hockey coach. What initially made you interested in flywheel technology, and what is the history of flywheel technology?
Yeah, so a little bit about the history of them first. So flywheel has been around for, you know, 1,000 years, and James Watt had a flywheel in his steam engine, and there are, you know, pictures of flywheel being used in different concepts, and it's been used in the engines and stuff like that. It's sort of a way to, you know, harness energy. And so the first study or publication they used it in a stationary bike in around 1915 in Copenhagen, Denmark. A few years later, in 1924 or 23, they did a study, local resistance training study using a flywheel. So it's been around a while, and it was sort of reinvented by those scientists at Karolinska in around 1990. When they realized that this could actually work in space, because it isn't based on gravity. So they pursued that, and I came in contact with them around year 2000, and I was of course interested in, you know, sports science, sports physiology, and strength and mass is, you know, one of the— hockey is a momentum-based sport, so that's, of course, interesting for me. And I was working with junior hockey players at the time at a pretty high level, so they were aspiring to, you know, go into the elite senior level. So, of course, making them stronger and more powerful and heavier and faster all at the same time is a big thing, that you— something you have to work with during those years. So really interested into the flywheel technology, because they had some good data on how it worked, and that they had good, really solid increases in strength and mass. And I also saw that, especially with our idea to build a more, you know, free weight-like device, that we could mimic the drills that we were using and maybe have some problems with the hockey players. We were mainly doing, you know, some Olympic lifting, squats, deadlifts, stuff like that. So, and the devices back then, they were basically the traditional weight stack devices, leg extension, leg curl. Our idea was to, what if we can replicate the stuff that we're doing by using flywheel technology? So that's how it was started. And that was to solve, you know, a bunch of different problems. First of all, when you get players when they're 17 or 18, they come from maybe smaller teams or clubs. They have a pretty low training age and maybe not very good at lifting. So you have actually to start, you know, teaching them technique. So you lose a lot of time there. But still they're strong and well-built. So we wanted to be able to maybe load them a bit more than we could. So using flywheel and harness was a way to, you know, work at strength and form at the same time. So that's what's really how the idea started with me and my colleague, since he also had an ice hockey background. So the science continued, and today I see there's still a lot of science that has the application of space. They do some unloading studies when they unload and train and see if they can, you know, counteract atrophy. But there are more and more research coming out, which is targeted to sports and performance applications.
You mentioned that in the 1990s, the Karolinska Institute was doing research in order to see how flywheel technology could possibly help prevent atrophy for astronauts up in space.
Yeah.
How does the flywheel work, and why would it work in space?
Yeah, it's sometimes it is even hard for me to believe that is this really working in space. But you know, I would like, you know, to really try to believe it. But because, you know, our flywheels, you know, they have a mass, so when you lift them, they do have, they, it's not like they're, yeah, they do have a, they're weighting something. They have a mass. So, but in space, they still have a mass, but they wouldn't be, they would be weightless, but they would still offer the same resistance. So how it works, if you, think about flywheel devices in general, it's that you have some sort of shaft, and on the shaft, you can, put on flywheels, and then you have a strap or a cord or something that's connected to the shaft. So you can sort of wind up the belt or the strap around the shaft. So when you pull that cord, you will start, the shaft will start rotate, and the flywheels will start rotate. So you have to put in energy to make them rotate, and that's not dependent on gravity. So that that resistance would be the same in space. So, and if you think about it, the flywheel is, if you look at the flywheel as it's rotating, you know, you would realize that half of the mass is moving downwards and half of the mass is moving upwards. So it's no really, there's really no shift in terms of, you know, gravity dependent, any gravity dependent work. So, but all bodies, there's one of, I think, is Newton's first law, that all objects resist a change in state, and that could be, you know, speed or direction. So if you want to accelerate something or decelerate it or make it change direction, or then you have to apply some sort of force or add energy into that to make that happen. So it's the same with flywheels. So this is gravity independent. I think it's great if they can use it in space, but I think we have a bunch of people down here on Earth that can use the features too, because it's have some really nice features with that comes with flywheel training. And to explain flywheel training, if you never tried it, I think it's hard to get a feeling for how it really feels, because a lot of people get surprised when they try it the first time, even if they read about it. I think the best way to describe this sort of, because we talk about inertia. The inertia is how much energy do I have to apply, or force do I have to apply to get to a certain speed. So a high inertia would require me more force to get to a certain speed, and with a low inertia would be, you know, more easy to accelerate it. So to get an understanding for that concept, I usually use an analogy where if you walk in water, if you walk in the water, maybe water up to your ankles or something, and you can see the water as, you know, the flywheel, the inertia. So if you go out deeper, it will be deeper and higher inertia, and the closer up to the beach, it will be lower inertia. So with the flywheel, if you pull real hard, it will be, you know, you will put more energy into the flywheel. It will sort of resist more. So, and if you go back to water, that would be, so if you go walk really slow in water or standing still, there will be almost no effort at all. If you start walking, it would be, you know, a little effort, but if you start running, it will be pretty heavy. And as you go out deeper into the water, you will have more inertia, but still, if you're standing still or moving really slowly, it won't be that hard. But if you would try to walk or start running with water up to your chest, it would be almost impossible. So it's the same with inertia. So accelerating, you can have put on a lot of flywheels and have a high inertia. You can still go really gentle, it won't be that hard. So it's not like we load up a bar with 100 kilos or 200 kilos, then you have to lift that to be able to move it. Nothing happens if you go lower than that. So you have to really, there's like a threshold to make it start moving, and you don't have that with inertia. It's just resisting your effort. So the harder you go, the harder it will resist, and we call it like a variable resistance. But to understand it, you have to really try it. So, but it's we get a lot of questions. People want to know, but how heavy is this? Yeah, it depends on how hard you pull. So, yeah. So it's a bit of different, it's a different concept.
Now that we talked a little bit about the science behind flywheel technology, I want to talk about the K-Box. So
Yeah.
What is the K-Box? What makes the K-Box unique and how does it work?
Yeah. So the K-Box is, it's short for kinetic box, but we just call it K-Box, and it's a multi-exercise flywheel device. So you can do a lot of different drills on it. So I would like it to compare it, you know, to your ordinary 20 kilo Eleiko bar or something. You could do a bunch of stuff with it. So it's a box, and there's a shaft coming out where you can put on flywheels. And in the center of the box, there's a hole, and there's a strap coming out there, and you connect that strap to, you know, a harness or a bar or a grip or, you know, an ankle cuff or whatever. And then you exercise. And most exercises, you stand on top of the K-Box. And if you look on social media, you see a lot of, you know, split squats, squats, deadlifts, high pulls, biceps curls, stuff like that. But you can also, you know, some people attach it to the wall or, you know, put it in an angle or doing a bunch of other stuff, some core stuff and rotational stuff. And yeah, so and that's how it looks. And so it's really, back when we started, I put together maybe a, made a list, maybe 20, 22 like official exercises. And you know, but people are really inventive. So you see, okay, people find out new exercises. And I don't know, I think we're way past 30. So, but you can do, of course, you can do a lot more specific drills on it. But I think you can do most drills, most basic drills. Yeah. And you're not really restricted to, you know, go up and down like you're doing with weights. You can, you have a freedom of motion. So in the frontal plane, you can do different drills. For example, if you want to do rows or stuff like that, you can. Since the flywheel doesn't care if you're pulling upwards or, you know, to the side. So it's, in that sense, it's more a bit similar like a cable machine.
Many of the listeners of this podcast are involved in semi-professional or professional sport. The K-Box has really made an inroad when it comes to sports performance. You can find it in professional teams, in soccer and hockey. I know the New York Rangers use it. Since I'm based out of New York City, New York City Football Club does. What possible applications does the K-Box have in professional sports and sports performance in general?
In general, I think it's a good tool for building strength and mass, and most science is there. And from those publications, we know that when we compare it, if you look at the isolated drills like leg extension, leg curls, and all the studies that you can see, you have a really robust gains in strength and mass, and also that the mass gains in mass comes a bit earlier than compared to the weight stack loaded devices. So that have a bunch of different reasons, but so I think it's really good for you know, the preseason training. To build a good base in strength, maybe put on some mass. There's also, I think it's really good for if you want to increase range of motion. For example, in squats, it's quite easy to come down really deep into the squat and work those, you know, deeper positions. That might be hard. With the bar, you might have to unload and go with a quite much lower weight than you maybe doing your, you know, regular, you know, half squats or something. But if you want to pursue that increased range of motion, you have to take off some weight. So I think that's a really good feature with the K-Box, because you can let it pull you down, you know, really deep into position. And since the resistance is how much you can pull, so when you come down into the deepest position, you will be weaker and then you will be able to, you know, pull, generate less force. But as you come up, you will generate more force through the range of motion, and then you can really work, you know, maximal over the range of motion from the deepest position to the top position. So you don't have to make a trade-off, or should I go with a deep squat and take off some weight, or should I go, you know, heavier and maybe build strength in the top but maybe have to limit my range of motion. So you don't really have to do that with the variable resistance, since you if you would pull all out through the range of motion, you will actually will be the flow is always resisting what you put in. So if you are weak in the angles where you're weaker, you will put in less force, and when you're stronger, you put in more force. So it's actually like you don't have a sticking point. So you can actually generate force all through the range of motion, which also makes it, I think that's one of the key aspects, is that you see when studies, when they measure that, they see that you also you get more strength over the whole range of motion compared to weight stack loaded device, where you actually often build more strength just around a sticking point. So I think it's very good for that basic training to build that base, you know, good foundation in strength, especially for team athletes where, you know, they're not supposed to be good lifters. They're supposed to be good with the puck or the ball. So the gym work is just to make them better players. So you want to get the work done. And there's also practical aspects around that, because I think it's quite safe and it's, you know, it's silent. You can work out in the pitch. It's quite fast. You know, you can cycle through quite many athletes on the same K box compared if you maybe work to Olympic lifts or back squats with the bar, because you don't have to change weights between every player. You just maybe adjust the strap length and then you go. So the transition between players are quite fast. So I think that solves a lot of practicals and also practical problems in training to get a, you know, efficient training in a safe way and do it without losing too much time. Moving forward, I think it's also, I also see it's good for, you know, I like doing some of the ballistic stuff or, you know, more explosive stuff on the K-box too. I'm not a very good Olympic lifter myself. You know, a lot of people are. I think they're really good exercises, but I've also seen, you know, a lot of people doing jump squats and stuff like that. And I don't like doing that myself. I prefer doing it on the K-box. And I think the one of the benefits with doing that on the K-box is that you don't get any airtime, because as soon as you're extended fully, you will be pulled back down. So you will be down in start position much faster, and you don't get that impact on the neck. And also that you can do, you know, lateral drills. For example, you can do like a lateral squat, more like a skating motions, which is of course good for hockey players, but also I think it's good for change of direction athletes if you have that in your sport. And you can do that in very, you know, explosive way. So I think that there'd be maybe something to gain for some athletes there. I have some friends, you know, decent level athletes on the national level here, for example, in volleyball, and they've done tons of jumps, you know, with barbells on their backs, and, you know, quite a few of them have problems with their backs now. So in that sense, I think the K-box is a good alternative. It's also in a team setting, I think you can use it for post-activation potentiation, and of course in individual sports too. You know, skiing is swimming, you know, swimming where the start is so important. You can get a lot of gain to if you have a faster start, and they made a study of that. The lunges for start compared to barbell lunges, and had a significant higher horizontal velocity in the start, and a significant lower time at, you know, 15 meters in the pool. So for post-activation potentiation, it's a really good tool, since you can, you know, you can bring it with you if you're going tour or game away, or, you know, even if you're going to ski, you can quite easily bring it to the top of the mountain if you want to. So I think there's some applications there, but special in that sense, it's you know, pretty individual, so you have to try out some protocol that works. But there have been some stuff made with post-activation potentiation for soccer players, and so they showed some, you know, they did a couple of sets before their training, after warm-up and before the team training, and they increased change of direction, speed, and sprint abilities during training.
This is actually one of the listener questions. Do you see the K-Box having a bigger presence in the area of general fitness or personal training?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, first of all, it's a much bigger market for us as a company. So even if we would, you know, penetrate only a fraction of that market, it would maybe be still a bigger chunk of our sales. So for us, of course, it's a big market. I think also there's a lot to gain from the untrained or, you know, sedentary people. They have the same, they have basically the same physiology as athletes. They will also, you know, gain strength and mass with the same rate. And most studies, as you know, are made from pretty, you know, untrained or, you know, healthy, recreationally active people. So that is basically general population. So if you go to the studies and look, you see that most studies are made of that type of persons. So to bring it out into the general population, there's a big difference when you don't have, maybe a lot of your listeners are very educated, they know a lot about training, and they could, you know, get new tools, whatever tools there are, or learn about new drills, and then in turn they can educate their athletes. So their athletes just have to do what they're being told, and that would probably work out pretty well. And general population, as you, there will be some, you know, of course you have to educate the personal trainers and also the general public, but I don't see a problem with people having K-boxes at home, combination with, you know, other things, what people like to use at home, you know, TheraBands or kettlebells or maybe bars, dumbbells, and also in gyms, of course. And I think it's, as a tool for a personal trainer, I think it's a really good tool, because you will probably be able to show the client results pretty fast, because you could basically take a new client off the street, and you, in the first session, you can have him do squats together, give him a decent load and then some eccentric load, and he will increase his range of motion, and he will increase his strength and get some increases in mass pretty fast. So I think it's he will see some fast gains, and I think that client would be really satisfied with that. And I think it's a really good tool, together with a, if you're a good personal trainer, a smart personal trainer, I think it's a really good tool in that person's hands. But then the next step would, if you just walked into a gym and just saw there would be like a bunch of flywheel devices, like the K-Box, with a multi-exercise device, I don't really see that maybe in the near future. Maybe the first step in the gyms, besides personal training, would probably be like a group training setting. And maybe after that. But yeah, hopefully, maybe we'll see that in the future. We'll see.
Getting back to what we're talking about, which is variable resistance.
Yeah.
What are some of the advantages of using the K-Box over more traditional weight training tools such as barbells, dumbbells, and plate-loaded machines?
When you get the flywheel spinning and you have you put a certain amount of energy into the flywheel in the concentric phase, and then you decelerate that in the same amount of energy in the eccentric phase. And with the weight, if you lift 100 kilos up, it's 100 kilos down, basically. So, but with flywheel, you can generate a lot of force. You can apply different methods, but you can put in a force on the concentric phase, and then, for example, manipulate how you decelerate in the eccentric phase and get a really high eccentric overload. And I think that is a very big benefit for the performance athletes, since the eccentric overload, I think, triggers, you know, strength, and also translates much more into performance, especially if you're trained from the start. Because an untrained person would probably, you know, jump fast, jump higher, sprint faster. He just goes to the gym and gets a bit stronger, and he will be improve his performance. But if you're already trained, it's much harder to get those increases in strength to really translate into performance. You know, a lot of players, you see, they get stronger and they get bigger, but they're not really making them faster over time. So I think the overload is a really good trigger to really be faster and jump higher. And so there's a bunch of methods to get that overload in different ways. But for example, one way is to, if you don't decelerate on the way down and you wait until maybe the last half of the eccentric action, then you have to decelerate really hard because you still have to absorb all that force that you generated in the concentric phase, and then you would have to increase them. So the eccentric power have to be much higher than the concentric power. So that's one easy way to work around it. You can also have like a spotter. For example, if you're doing a squat, I can help you on the way up if I have a grip or something. So I can have a grip connected to, you know, the harness. And so when you extend in the concentric phase, I help you and I pull. And since the resistance is variable, the flywheel is only absorbing the energy that we generate. So if you work 100% on the way up, even if I help you, you will still work 100%. My 20% or 30% that I put in will only be on top of that. It would be different if you were trying to do a squat with 100 kilos and I help you. If I lift 30 kilos, you will lift 70. So, but with flywheel, if you go 100%, you will put 100% of your energy into the flywheel, and that would be your maximum. And my the energy I put in would be on top of that. And then, if I let you do the eccentric phase yourself, then you will have a really high overload. There's a bunch of ways to do that. You can do different movement patterns. For example, you can do a stronger movement pattern in the concentric phase. For example. You can do a deadlift or a more squat type action on the way up, and then you do, for example, an RDL on the way down, and then you get a really high eccentric overload.
I was going to say, as part of your position, you know, you obviously have the advantage of talking to various coaches who use the K-Box. What are some ways that they incorporate the K-Box into their gym-based training routines, and what are some suggestions that you would have?
Yeah. Well, I have to say that I think that's the main reason why I love my work, is the part that I can talk to users and learn from them how they use the K-Box, because that's really interesting and really learning. And it's also, we always have great discussions. So, I love that about my work. So people are using it. I think one thing that we haven't mentioned, you know, is that some people do, I know they do, is like metabolic conditioning. So, for example, if I know that there's alpine skiers, they do squats. Where they set the strap length so they can't really fully extend. So they work around their skiing position. So maybe they go down into parallel squat and then maybe extend, but they have a deficit of maybe 15 degrees on top, so they can't really fully extend. And they have to squat up and down there between those positions continuously for maybe 60 seconds or 90 seconds. And that's, you know, for metabolic reasons. And that's interesting because I got a chance to talk to some alpine skiers that they were doing that in the training. And it's really interesting to hear that they really felt that the sensation in their legs was almost exactly what they feel in the end of their runs when they ski.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And they can also, since you're not depending, you can since you're using in that setting, you're using a harness. So, and the harness is, we can talk about that separately, but it's ergonomical that way. So you always have a very low torque around the lower back, so you can actually, you know, have a very leaned forward position, and there won't be any big torque on your lower back like it would be if you had a barbell, you know, up high on your back, and then lean forward, and you have a really high torque on lower back. So with the harness, you go around that, and for example, the skiers, they really like to have that, you know, forward bend positions, like when they're skiing and working that in those angles. And also, since you don't have to go up and down, they can move a little, you know, back and forth, left and right. So they actually have the coach that's timing them. He's like, okay, now you have to work side to side. Okay, up and down. Okay, more to the left. So he can have the athlete, you know, working, sort of mimicking a rundown. So it was really interesting, and I've seen it in action, and it's really interesting to see. And I'm glad I'm not doing that myself, but because it's really tough work. But you know, that's one example how they use it in a more specific way.
Now, one thing that I definitely want to point out is, because we have been talking about the practical use, and you're talking about variable resistance, eccentric overload, and how the K-box can possibly give you tools that you won't get from traditional weight training, but we haven't really talked about the research backing it up, studies that have been done comparing the two. Could you elaborate a little bit about those studies and what they showed?
Yeah. So if we look at the history of the science, you know, the first 10, 15 years, there was a lot about the studies trying to validate flywheel training as a method of resistance training. So the first studies are looking at, you know, EMG, force output, stuff like that, you know, angular velocity, stuff like that, to see if the do we think that this would give gains in strength to the same extent, or would this work as a resistance training. So the first years are our studies from that, and then there are some training studies coming out during that period, pretty short term, like most training studies, you know, like 6 weeks. And basically all studies are made, you know, on isolated drills. Researchers like to, you know, limit the variables, so their knee extensions is probably the most leg extension is probably the most used in the studies. It's also good because they can do unilateral drills, and they have like their own control, and there's some other methodological parts that, you know, makes that easier. And then they look at the mass and strength gains. And this and all studies actually show in those settings advantage for flywheel over the weight stack devices. And what's interesting is, like I said, it's not only that you maybe, you know, with the same, basically the same protocol, get more strength gains and more mass, but also that you can see that the strength is distributed over a whole range of motion. I think that's really interesting. Going forward, there are coming, if you look at what's coming out, have come out in the last, you know, 3-4 years, there are much more, you see more studies containing drills, like they do stuff like you do on the K-box, you know, squats, for example, and also that you put it in the context more of sports training. They add it, you know, before training to see for PAP effects. The swim start study mentioned, what they do before a swim start. They're also doing in season training with soccer teams. I think there's like 4, maybe 5 studies out when they sort of incorporate flywheel training into in season training with soccer players to look at do they get any effect from that? Or and it shows pretty good results. I know you're interested in soccer, so maybe I should, you know, go through those a little bit more in detail.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So there's this three studies that came out from the same group, basically. That's first author is Hoyo. And they looked at first, they had a study where they did half squats before practice, between warm-up and practice, and they looked at change of direction and contact time and ground reaction forces, counter movement, jump, sprints. And they saw that the improved contact time and reaction forces and the counter movement jump increased by about 6%. And there was a possible increase in sprint time, acute, for the following session. And they also done that as a training study when they did that over 10 weeks, to saw a similar effect. Also done a study where they combined squat and leg curl, also using flywheel, during 10 weeks of in soccer in-season training, and saw that their improved sprint speed and counter movement jump compared to the control group that didn't have that extra training. So there was no detrimental effects, but increased effects. So that was, all those studies were basically, they were elite junior players around 18, 19. So I think they're pretty good. It was pretty solid base from the start. There is also one study that it's made by, this one I think is done in Spain also. It's they had a bit different setting. They had like they had divided players into two groups, and so one group had a. They did, both groups had a battery of 8 drills. And so the experimental group had like 8 exercises where some, they had some lateral flywheel, lateral squats. They did a hamstring exercise. And they also had a vibration. And then some other, regular drills, exercises, and the control group had a more of a jumps and sprints type of program, and I compared that over 11 weeks. So it's not really a flywheel, flywheel only study, but it's a protocol containing a lot of flywheel and vibration towards a sprint jumping protocol. But they saw a quite big, advantage for that first group with flywheel and vibration. Decreased their sprint times with 6-8%, and counter movement jump was up 13% over 11 weeks in season training. So, but it's not, a pure flywheel study.
One thing I definitely want to touch upon as we get to the end of this podcast is, how do you think you can improve upon the K-Box that you currently have now?
That's another part of my work, research and development. Of course, for the consumer, I think that if you ask people what they would like, I think a lot of people will see that it was cheaper, of course. Making stuff cheap, you can always make stuff cheaper, but you have to, do some smart changes so you don't have to trade quality or function. So, but we're working pretty hard with development right now. We want to, improve functionality, improve, for example, friction. We're working against friction. We want to get as little friction as possible in the K-Box. So that's like a constant work we do all the time. And also that we, since today when we have one K-Box, it's like one K-Box suits all. So we would like to, maybe people have, maybe if you want a K-Box at home or for your NFL team or for your physiotherapy clinic or for your soccer team, or if you're traveling a lot or if you have a gym, you will probably maybe we probably have different features for that KBOX. So we maybe look into addressing, you know, different targets group with maybe have a bit wider portfolio. So and also we like to improve the feedback part of it. Today we have a pretty simple real-time feedback, so we can get power measurement and in real time when you do your training. So we want to improve that, of course. So maybe get more metrics and develop that.
This is, I think, a great springboard to our final question, which also comes from a listener of the podcast. And he stated, and this is Sergio, Call Valley published several articles on Freelap about the KBOX and the K-meter. And in some occasions, he suggested that he would like the data based in the cloud. Is this going to happen soon? And what are some new features in the short term that you're looking to improve upon the K-meter?
Yeah, well, we're beta testing a version right now, and I think it will probably be maybe published around the same time as this podcast, I think. The new features we added is instead of you can limit your sets before you could basically just do repetitions. So you said if you want to do a limited number of repetitions or 8 repetitions or 10 or whatever. And now you can limit the set with time. So you can set a time, which is good for maybe the metabolic training. And also there's a drop-off function. So you could either set a drop-off percentage and then the K-meter will stop you when you go below that threshold. And also you can set an absolute number. For example, I want to be above 500 watts, and then it will stop when you go below 500 watts. But I think that drop-off feature is quite good if you want to pace your athletes, because it's quite easy to, you know, do, since there's no failure going on the K-box, because you will always be able to what happens if you do a maximal set on the K-box is that you will do, you know, you will produce a lot of energy in the first repetitions, high concentric force, basically a 1 RM, and then the K-box will pull you down and you have quite much, you know, a high eccentric load and the stretch shortening effect and everything. So the second and maybe the third rep, they will all be, you know, more powerful usually. So repetition number 1, 2, 3 would be more and more powerful. Then you start fatiguing and then you start drop off. But there's, you never really come to the point where, okay, it's too heavy, I can do one more rep, because you will be weaker and weaker and you will be able to accelerate the flywheel slower, you know, less and less. So you could do 10 reps, 20, 30, until you basically crawl away from the K-box. So I think that drop-off setting is really good. So you can set, for example, 95%, and then you start, if you go all out, the K-meter will calculate an average for the first 3 reps. And then if you have set, for example, 95%, it will tell you when you go below 95% of that average. So that would be like when I have a 5% drop from the first 3 reps, then it will, you know, cut me off. So I think that's good to, you know, keep the quality in training and not, you know, not overdo it. So and also we added some velocity metrics. I know people are really interested in contract velocity, so we added some peak speed and average speed in motion, and there's some other features. You can there's a landscape mode, you can get a good view of the power while you're training, stuff like that. So, and the other question is the cloud, and that's basically what I've been working with today. when I was supposed to prepare for this interview. I've been working with this. So we have set up, we have an idea what we want to do. And we, of course, we want to put it into the cloud. And we're looking for suppliers and how that database should look and how the integration should look. So that's definitely something that we want to add here, not too far away in the future.
Cool. Fantastic. Yeah. If anyone has any questions or comments about the podcast, what's the best way they can contact you? And second question, if anyone wants to find out more information about the K-Box, how can they go about doing that?
Feel free to reach out to me. I'm on Twitter. Try to be, you know, pretty active there. And so I'll be happy to try to answer the questions I get. And of course, if there are more discussion or longer questions, maybe you can send me an email, frederick.correa@eccentric.com. And my Twitter handle is @frederickcorea. If you want to learn more about flywheel training, you can look into our website. We try to, you know, put up some content there. Sometimes when I get questions about something, that ends up me writing a blog post or something about that. So it's always, if you don't find anything, if you don't find the information, just, you know, reach out. We're doing a bunch of stuff this spring and this year, so a lot of international events. So you can look at, we have a calendar, you can see, maybe you can join one of our events. We're also having our summit here, Eccentric Summit, here in May 21st. And I think we'll have Mike Young as a speaker, and also a guy from the UK, Ben Drury. I think Mike has been on your podcast, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So so they will talk about their training and maybe how they're incorporating the K-Box. Ben has been doing some research on it in the UK. So we'll see what kind of data he brings. We'll also, talk about new products, and there will be a scientific update. So if you want to come to Stockholm in May, you can check out that event. You're welcome to come.
Frederick, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You know, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to come on, share your information about flywheel training and also about Eccentric and the K-Box.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me. And I know your listeners want to, you know, specific stuff, and it's, if they feel like they want more specific info and they have like a specific question, then feel free to ask me and I'll try to be, you know, as precise as I can.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah. I'm going to be linking your email and your Twitter on the show notes. This way that they can easily reach out to you.
Thanks.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of the Historic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please make sure to head over to iTunes to leave a review and rating. It really helps others discover the show. I would greatly appreciate your help in trying to increase the number of reviews that the podcast currently has. It's about 7 in the United States and about 30 worldwide. It's a little bit funky in the sense that the way iTunes works, you can only see the reviews based on the country that you have chosen as your preference. And most of the time, the preference is set to your home country. So you may not see all of the reviews, but if you switch over to another iTunes store, like let's say you click for the United States, you should see the reviews and ratings there. I'd really appreciate your help on this. I'll see you guys next week.